just rattle your bones, shake the earth. It is Southern California. We're prone to earthquakes. Welcome. Thank you for tuning into the call sheet. I'm Keith Coogan, and we're joined here.
Earl Skakel. I forgot my name.
I happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's Hollywood, right?
I have two names.
What's the second one?
Keith Mitchell is the real world meat space. I am a human being. I gotta like have a driver's license kind of a name. And then Keith Coogan for the movie stuff.
See, I want to have Michael as my middle name because I have a theory that you'll work a lot in this business if your middle name is Michael. Philip Michael Thomas, Anthony Michael Hall, Paul Michael Glazer. There was one other guy.
Jan Michael Vincent. Sure.
I mean, you'll work a lot the first 2 years, and then you have a nice 20-year hiatus.
Hold on. There's some sort of attack airplane mode. See, on iPhone, that's nice. You go airplane mode and you don't interfere with the microphone. Sorry about that, people. Technical issue.
Droid X, Verizon.
These things, did you ever think you'd be watching Bridge Over the River Kwai on your phone, in your hand?
It's unbelievable. I mean, from, like, my first cell phone looked like a fax machine. I mean, it was gigantic. Because I saw Miami Vice, and I'm like, that's the phone I want. The Tubbs and the Testarossa. He would pick up, like, this monstrous phone.
And you could cook a grilled cheese just by calling Guam.
Yeah, I mean, the digits look like an iPad, you know. It's technology is amazing.
It is. And I think that I don't think people really do watch whole movies on Netflix on their phone, even with the new, you know, fancy phones. It's just the feeling that they can. I'm good. Any long line? Something's going on. I could always whip this out. Do they? I mean, it's such a busy world, so do we really?
I mean, I would get a headache. I know you can watch porn on your phone. Who wants to watch that? Other than me.
What's going on the bathroom stalls at work? You know, what's going on? Ooh, in that McDonald's bathroom. That guy on his phone doing something funny.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I was at the gym the other night, and it's like, wow, what if some pervert's in here with his iPhone? He could take pictures of all of us naked dudes, and I'm sure at the airport stalls.
You're not naked working out. This is like after showering or some crap like that, right?
Well, no, I go in the locker room in a hazmat suit at my gym. I mean, it's real gross. And I go in the steam room. I go in my shoes, shorts. I go topless because it's hot in there. And the things I see at my gym are out of control. I won't mention which gym it is.
That's a good show. Reality show people, even scripted television, The Gym.
Well, there was that one sitcom that was on, I'm old enough to call Channel 5 when it was Channel 5. It was a show about the gym, and I think it got canceled right after the second commercial break. It was called Muscle. I don't know who was in it, but it was horrible. You know, real bad. I mean, I'm talking Viva Laughlin bad. Poor Hugh Jackman, boy.
Whoops. Bad. Remember Whoops?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Muscle might be one of the worst sitcoms ever. It's top five.
Sure. Sure. Oh, no. There have been bad attempts, and thankfully they do cancel them quick, and they don't linger.
See, I think they should let them linger. Like, I was obsessed with that show on ABC a couple of years ago called Blind Justice. And Ron Eldard was a star. I mean, he's a very good actor. And it was a show about a slightly unbelievable. He was a blind cop in New York who still got to carry his gun. Stephen Bochco, I mean, he don't put much stink out there. And the episode when the crook stole his guide dog brought tears to my eyes because you just heard the dog yelping off screen. And this is before Michael Vick's stuff happened. And it was just so, I cried. Then they canceled it the next week.
Hmm. Good shows. The Riches, they canceled that too early. There was more.
Yeah.
Way more story to tell and cheated all the fans and mumbled about a movie to wrap it up. We'll wrap everything up with a two-hour special. And it was just, you know, ignored. It's like this great beginning and a kind of a middle. And you're getting interested and yanked.
Well, it was like that. I mean, there's so many examples, but that one show on NBC, it was called Heist. And it was only 6 episodes. And basically, it was a whole season was about this bank heist in Beverly Hills. They air the first 5, moderate ratings, and then they just canceled it. I mean, why not just show how this show ended? You got one episode. One episode. Yeah. You couldn't just give us that?
They'll dump it at like 3 in the morning.
Or put it on Friday nights. That's the kiss of death.
Yeah, or Saturday at 8, which is when the call sheet is live on SkidRowStudio.com. Skid Row Studios, sorry, plural. The number to call in, it's being brought to you by Jeremy.
1-800-893-9562.
Call in with any questions for legend Keith Coogan. I'm just a ham and egger. Keith's done it all in the business.
Oh, I'm ham. I'm like soy. It's not even egg. There's not even enough protein or meat in there to really... No, I really do feel like I got a lot to learn from people like Paul Newman. Look how he went from young, you know, sexy and exciting and aged. Probably the model for aging graciously as a man in the business, as any man could do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, my favorite Paul Newman movie, being a hockey fan, is Slapshot. And he was old then. Like, but he's still, you know, some guys keep it together.
Towering Inferno?
With OJ.
Yeah.
OJ's finest work outside of a double murder.
Allegedly.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I mean, his blood was everywhere, but in his own body. But it's possible.
Did Paul Newman ever have any Hollywood shenanigan meltdowns that anyone knows of? Any arrests, or was he political? Was there anything that, you know, I can't think of anything that stood out from just the work and maybe press for the work.
Well, you know, he was probably lucky that he grew up in his prime in the non-TMZ world of the 70s and 80s. And, you know, he probably did. But I think back then there was a certain amount of rapport with the press, and I'm sure he got caught with a underage starlet or doing something he shouldn't have been doing, but it's like, hey, that's Paul Newman.
Right. He just married her for like 40 years.
Yeah. No Harvey Levin with his band of Rat Pack paparazzis. I mean, they have those guys everywhere. So now it's, you can't do anything without
getting caught. I see the bus, the actual bus from town to town driving around L.A. Pointing out the spots, and it's really small. It's not one of those big Hollywood tour buses. It's like a little van.
I actually was asked to be one of the tour guides, but it's not my thing.
You should try it. I'm sure you know enough about the town driving around. You're like, no, hang a left on Ivar. Let me show you this.
Well, yeah. I mean, I should just get my own bus. Who needs TMZ? I'll give people a real tour. You know, hey, this is where, I went to a party up at Rupert Murdoch's kid's house and saw a gangbang. I've been to a lot of uncomfortable moments at these.
Right now is an uncomfortable moment with what you just said. Really?
Yeah, it was crazy. Oh, no. I had to leave.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was one of his kids' house in Bel Air. And this place was so big, we were in the pool house. And I thought this was the main house. I mean, this was the most amazing pool house I've ever seen. And then people started showing up and girls started doing whatever. And then, it takes a lot for me to leave a room. And I left that.
I think this isn't my scene.
Right. I mean, not in that number. Maybe if the numbers were a little less, there was some, this wasn't my scene. I left.
Sure.
So. Thank God TMZ wasn't around back then. This is the mid-90s.
Imagine some of the things that have happened in these hills since the 20s, 30s. Oh, and
just, yeah, I mean, I mean, you've probably been privy to some pretty wacky parties.
No. I would say anything that goes on at like a Greek institution, frat house, you know, on or off campus kind of a thing. For 4 years, these people, you know, drain their brain cells with acute alcoholism and other things. God knows how they study and, you know, pass and make their scholarships. I wouldn't say I've seen anything in Hollywood myself much worse than you'd see there. Is that vague enough?
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
No names. No one's asking for names.
Protect. No, no, no.
We protect the guilty.
No, good, fun parties and... no, you know, you would have suspect just like in the, you know, episodes of Growing Pains or something. When Mike Seaver goes to the party with the girls with the shoulder pads and the Arizona, you know, like taupe colors. And they're at the party and they're like, everyone's going to the bathroom. What's going on in the bathroom? They're doing coke in there.
Yeah,
they're like, invite Mike in. Come on, Mike. That's a good episode. Yeah.
Oh, I know. We really want to get life's lessons from Kirk Cameron.
No, but I have been peeing and, you know, literally, hey, I'm peeing. Would you like want to do some coke? That's, you know, sure. And I'm sure there's been parties in places, but most of the times I think it's been behind or, you know, secret or, you know, they would hide that kind of a thing. Anything just crazy on the drug sex? Oh, everyone's an exhibitionist, sure.
Oh, that, yeah.
You know, that's in relationships don't, you know, you can't count on an actor and actress, you know, sticking together long or probably taking advantage of, you know, mutual press on something they just worked on. And, you know, how long does that usually work out?
Well, you just can't do it. There's too many temptations.
Are there crazy people out there like rumored... like Colin Farrell or Jude Law or like people that are just fucking getting tons of tail.
But they do it right, you know. They're not married. They're just eternal playboys. Clooney.
Mm.
He's the ultimate. But these girls know what they're doing with him, you know, with him. They know what he is. He's not going to marry them probably. And, you know, just enjoy his company, before he tosses you out like a spoiled piece of salami.
He's probably got like a, he meets you within 20 minutes and she's barely paying attention. He's like, I do have a rule, like, you know, don't ever ask me to marry you, but that's great. We'll just move on.
Yeah.
And they would do, and they did for months and it's in the press. And one day, beautiful by Lake Como. And she goes, hey, you know, about the marriage thing. That's it. It's over. I told you once. I don't want to, you know, get married. And don't push it. It seems like maybe they're, the press always paints it that, you know, oh, they pushed and they really wanted to get married. And he's like, nope, got that. Like, get off of me feeling.
Yeah, George Clooney doesn't want to get married. I mean, when it's just too much for him to turn down. I mean, I know if I'm getting a lot, he's getting quadruple. I'm just saying I'm getting a lot.
Oh, great.
I mean, I do all right for non-celebrity. I mean, I have a great girlfriend now, but, you know, back in the day, I did all right for a little tyke. See, all my friends were, you know, I was a sober driver. So I'd get all the slobs. And, you know, they need loving too. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Well, I have to admit and confess I've actually been the, you know, designated driver as well. And, you know, you're there and I have like a vehicle that can kind of take everybody and talk to the bartender and you're, you know, drinking your Cokes and shooting your pool and playing your darts. And there's a moment in, you know, I'm sure in comedy and, you know, even in movies and TV, there's always parties and rap parties and this is some sort of event, you know, oh, it's the wardrobe's birthday. We're going out tonight. Like what? Okay. You know, there's always these kinds of events and parties and everyone going crazy. I don't know. It's fun and it's part of it and the social thing and people having to, you know, kind of mingle. It's like weird. It's like constantly having office parties. Really?
Well, and you know, like in my case, I'm the funny guy, so that's I'll probably never get a girl strictly on my looks. I mean, I'm not a bad looking dude, but you know.
So you wait till that moment right after midnight, between midnight and one, bar changes. And if you're sober during that process, when it happens, it's fascinating. It's just everything starts getting louder and bumpier and this is spillier. And you see the kind of change as the whole room takes over in this hive mind kind of rhythmic, you know. It really is something to watch. And I recommend it, you know, if you go out regularly with your friends and everything, try it one night. And just watch collectively between midnight and one. It's like witching hour.
Oh, well, it's even worse between one and two. That's when everyone starts pairing up. And then there's inevitably a few who didn't get picked. And then that's when you move in for the kill. Especially closer to two. It's a real hornet's nest. I was so horny at one point, I wouldn't leave my house till like 1:15. I said, all right, I'll let the booze and coke settle in. I'll just come in like a ninth inning and a closer in the baseball game, and you just slide right in. Hey, how are you? My name's Earl.
You're so John Nash with your game theory. Nice.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's like this in every city, but in, you know, the Los Angeles and Hollywood and Beverly Hills bar scene, you know, you never want to get there before one. I don't. I mean, I don't go to clubs anymore, but, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, there was clubs in the 90s, and they're still kicking. There's still places like the Dragonfly open. And they used to do, get here before 10, free drinks, you know, or, you know, from 9 to 10, it would be free drinks. Free drinks, like open bar, literally, to get people to start the club. And, you know, you roll in, you see the same collection of a few circles of friends at, 9:15, hey, what's up? Some of them are setting up or DJing or in, you know, the band that's going on that night. And the party starts.
Yeah, you never want to get there at 8 or 9. You know, it's just 4 hours of waiting for various party favors to kick in. There's just too much opportunity to get swooped on. So that's why, you know, and the guys, you know, they're drunk or whatever. So they're not thinking clearly. So if you come to the club with a sober mind at 1:15, 1:30, it's just... it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Okay. I accept your theory. And what, you know, is that's... what kind of girls are these? Is it a one-night stand in that situation? Is it...
Back then it was, you know...
You keep seeing people in the same social circles afterwards?
No, the girls, they would find other watering holes. I don't think that they wanted to be seen going back to the backstage bar in Beverly Hills every week, you know, because then, you know, people would be like, hey, that girl's get her. And, you know, no, I mean, it's about respect. You know, so then you try and find the other bars they're going to, and, you know, okay, so you got to have options. You know, they're just playing, you know, it's like a quarterback audibling, you know. You look over the line, and, you know, if you don't see what you like, then you got to go for, you know, play B. Sometimes you could hit play G on any given night.
What is the situation in comedy clubs and where have you been spending a lot of time? And that was one thing I noticed when my family was like working on acts and writing for, we would write. We, you know, and write for comics and spend a lot of time at these clubs. It was tedious, I'm honestly, over and over. Are you in them all the time?
Yeah, yeah. Unless, you know, I'm doing a theater gig, which is great. I love that. Because it's just one show. And, you know, when you go, say, do a weekend at an improv and wherever, Texas, you know, you're there for 3 or 4 days doing, you know, 5 to could be as many as 10 shows if they're selling well. But I don't really like, you know, it's a lot of, it's just too much, you know, sure, when you were going to clubs, you know, you're seeing 20 comics a night and just, they all kind of blend into the same, you know, so it's
a
very...
What's the road like for comedy or a troupe or a gang going on the road Do you go with like the same kind of group of comics booked into this, you know?
Well, I mean, I've done all kinds of versions of the road. The best is going out with Rob Schneider. I mean, that's just, I've been with him for like 2 years, and it's, I didn't really realize how famous he was. Obviously I knew who he was, but when you're, I mean, people just freak out. They see him because he's kind of identifiable, when he's got a hat on and, non-typical clothing, it's like, yeah, that's Rob Schneider. And they just, it was, and the crowds are great. I mean, even though, like when we did Modesto, it was like a 2,000 seat theater, and it's just me and him. And it's kind of intimidating because you walk out to that crowd, and like when I go see Kiss, I don't care who the opening act is. I'm there to see Kiss. So I know what they're all thinking.
How is that opening?
It's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, it's the hottest crowd you'll ever be in front of because they're in a good mood. They've paid a lot of money to see a celebrity. And, there's not many celebrities of his stature doing stand-up right now. So it's, especially when you play a place like, say, Modesto or Edmonton, which is kind of far up into Canada, celebrities don't go up there. So there's a unbelievable energy in the room. And so they kind of look at me like, okay, who's this guy? But, usually it goes pretty well. Unlike a recent show our producer saw, maybe not have the set I wanted to at a certain comedy club nearby our studios. So once the first joke goes well, they get behind you.
Sure. We're being beamed, I guess, from space.
I thought I was an airplane.
The number to call if you're listening live, and if you've gone onto iTunes or Stitcher, there's a phenomenal amount of ways to share our show. If you go on skidrowstudios.com and you go and look at all, there's great shows. There's dozens of shows and great programming and a whole network here 24/7 for you to listen to. Great music and tons of different themes and angles, and all right here recorded in downtown LA, which kind of is, nothing's done in LA. It hasn't been for years. This is the first, LACC's here, or the LA Theater Company, LATC. I've been here once or twice in the entire time I've ever lived in Southern California, worked on a commercial or two in the middle of the night in, downtown. Right. But no one's ever downtown in LA. That's the big joke.
Well, I think they've really, it's kind of a wacky area, certain parts of downtown. So I don't think anyone comes here unless you have to. Now they're cleaning it up because they don't want people to be afraid. It's like a hip area now, ever since Staples Center was built. You want people to go to the hockey games and Laker games. And, I would, if you can remember, like post or pre 98, this area was kind of rough. And certainly around Broadway, it's not exactly Holmby Hills. I don't think Candy Spelling will be shopping for a house around here, but
you can get good deal on gold down here, though, right?
A little more than gold as well.
Okay.
I mean, you go by the comedy club in downtown LA, it's like a modernized version of The Wire down there. I mean, you got people working the corners, and I've been offered crack. Xanax is a real big product, and they just walk by it. Xanax.
I was on the Fox lot the other day, and someone offered me crack. The Skid Row Studios also has Qumran Report, which is a great, very topical show about existing down here and services to help and how people are making their way through it. So go to skidrowstudios.com and go to your favorite shows and you'll see share. And it's got, if it doesn't have every single thing you kind of are a part of and how you communicate and share with people, it's got every button. It's a beautiful piece. Thank you, Jeremy, for putting that together.
Jeremy's the man.
Thanks, guys.
That's it. That's all we get out of it.
Sorry.
Drag it out of you.
He's behind the scenes.
The number to call again, Jeremy, what was that?
1-800-893-9562.
I had seen early morning Amanda Bynes and her DUI. How old is she? Anyone know?
Old enough. She's in her early 20s.
Okay, so she's of legal age to drink
and
drive, but not both at the same time. She had a cop.
Yeah, I mean, and those West Hollywood cops, if you've ever seen them, they're all models. They're all ripped. They're the last people you want to have a run-in with.
Aren't they sheriffs? West Hollywood hires out to sheriff.
Big sheriffs.
Big sheriffs.
I mean, they're all like, they're kind of reminds me of the crew that were the terrorists in Die Hard. You know, all good-looking guys. You know? And, you know. I actually saw that whole thing when she walked out of the sheriff's department. I was walking my dog, Lois. I have a little mutt, and I saw it. You know, she looked a little haggard.
They had pictures of her at the police garage getting her car this morning. They're like wearing the same thing she got arrested in.
Rough night, you know. Just have a designated driver.
How was there press at the release?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, you know, these paparazzis and TMZ, and I think another one's called Radar Online. That's like TMZ's competitor. They just have sources everywhere. I'm sure a sheriff called and said, hey, you know, we're going to release her in the next 20 minutes. You know, I mean, they have a full-time guy at the Comedy Store just in case something happens. That's his job, is just to sit there and hope a famous comic is seen doing something they shouldn't be doing. And or a fight breaks out, something, which happens a few times at the store a month, probably. You know,
I hear it's kind of a little more Wild West as far as business goes than other clubs in town, and that's perhaps part of its genius. And
it's like I think everyone calls it an artist colony, you know, where it's like the Improv and Laugh Factory and the Ice House in Pasadena. They're more just comedy clubs. Come enjoy the show, have dinner, you know, leave at the end of the night. Where the Comedy Store is, enjoy the show and whatever else happens here. Take whatever else as to where your mind takes you.
Now, that's a good deal, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're out for entertainment, perhaps not family entertainment, try the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard.
Just tell them Earl sent you and you'll be let in for free. And
is that true?
Absolutely. And I get, I don't even perform there that much. So
there's a 9-drink minimum?
Oh, absolutely. And the drinks are stiff. The great bartenders at the store, they really, because they're all comics, so they really, if you're looking for a stiff drink, definitely the Comedy Store will, because some of the acts you have to watch toward the end of the night, you want to be nice and plastered. Real nice and plastered.
Thank you. I feel like now I like an invite to the Magic Castle. Like it's like,
oh, please,
very special. Thank you for sharing that with our Skid Row listeners and our call sheet fans.
And you must see the last act every night. It's the same guy every night. His name's Don Barris. He does the warm up for Jimmy Kimmel. And it's just so funny to see him go from, you know, a Jimmy Kimmel warm up show, which you have to be, you know, kind of clean because you're, you know, tourist and whatnot. And, you know, it's a Disney show. And you see that Don, and then you see the late night Don. And he's the only guy who could rein in the madness. He'll get girls to come on stage, take their tops off. You know, he's just got the most unbelievable mind control over people. He could get people to do stuff they never thought they would do.
Mind control over people?
It's unbelievable.
Like a hypnotist act, or like just feeding into what
both
people want to do anyway? And
yeah, I mean, there. the things I've seen late night because of Don is...
Don Barris?
Yeah, he made a cult movie called Windy City Heat, which was a movie where they fooled this guy into thinking he was going to be a star in this action movie. And it was basically a reality movie. And this guy to this day still thinks, and it was released, I think it won, beat out Napoleon Dynamite for Best Picture at Montreal Comedy Festival. So it was a legitimate movie. And, you know, it's just the fact that he could get this guy, Perry, to believe that he's an action star now. He's just, his mind control is unbelievable. He could get you naked on stage at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I'm not going to give him the chance to try, but that's...
It's possible.
Got to get way far away from Sunset Boulevard near 2 o'clock in the morning. You'll get pulled over.
Not necessarily at the Comedy Store.
Because you're staying till 5, is what you're saying.
Most businesses close at 2 on the Strip. If you ever drive by the Comedy Store at 3 in the morning, the lights will be on and you'll see a performer on stage most nights.
Wow. It's kind of like good times.
Oh, absolutely. It's all in good fun. It's kind of like the bar in Star Wars. You know, just a lot of interesting characters. And it's like an open call for a Jerry Springer show. It's just...
When you go on the... It's interesting to have a home like that because... I can't think of many artists or troupes in film and stuff. Yeah, there's different stages. There's Second City and there's improv and everyone, you know, there are, I guess, families. But in film, you know, what, a studio? Oh, that set we shot on once? It's like, you know, oh, for a sitcom, sure, you got the lot and, you know, the stage you've been on for 7 years, you know, that's home. And you've like already carved it up and written shit on the back of the flats. And, you know, that's been there for, there's a history to that.
Right.
But sometimes on film, like on the road, do you go to places you've never been and all you can do, and you're at odd hours, just turn to the people you're with and create a little bubble of insanity and take LA with you and like try to exist in, you know, Omaha.
Because the locals there are so happy that, you know, you want to hang with them. That they'll show you around, you know, like especially in Edmonton, it's a great setup because the nightclub, everything's in the mall in Edmonton. You know, no one goes out. It's just the world's biggest mall is in Edmonton. Although the Mall of America in Minnesota, they argue, it's funny, they say they have more square footage in the Edmonton Mall. Like, well, we have more stores. I mean, I walked around for 2 days. I didn't even cover half the mall. I mean, they have a water park there. They have a hockey rink. I mean, just unbelievable amount of stuff. And but the nightclub is right across the way from the comedy club. So everyone goes over there. And the locals, if they see the comic who was just on stage in there, they're like, oh my God. I mean, it's the closest thing I've ever felt to being like the Beatles being mobbed. I mean, girls grabbing your ass, guys grabbing your asses, because they're just so excited that you want to hang out. And like, that you don't have an attitude of, well, I'm from LA. I'm not going to hang with people from Edmonton. So you definitely, the party follows you on the road. And I've never had drugs or drink in my life, but it's still fun to be in that atmosphere.
And I so congratulate you on that only because this town is crazy and filled with it, honestly. I mean, we've seen it time and time and time again. And that's only the ones we know about.
Oh, yeah. But I've never felt tempted. That's the weird thing. I'm around it probably every night. But I just, you know, I don't think you have to do that stuff to have a good time. It's still fun to go to the parties I go to and the, you know, the clubs and the situations I'm in. I've never once felt, God, I wonder what that's like. I'm probably too scared I'd like it. Like energy drinks are my drug, like we've discussed before. And If I did cocaine like I did energy drinks, I probably wouldn't be on this show right now. It'd be buried.
I haven't talked about the new update on the Whitney Houston reveal of the autopsy and the 0.05 grams per milliliter of whatever that means, cocaine in the system and taken from in her leg, they removed some blood and measured this. She was found, terrible to say, and of course her family, I'm so sorry, but it was news, and you know, I want to talk about it. She was found face down in the tub. I didn't know that before, and I always presumed when I fall asleep in the tub, it's always just, lying at least face up. How do you wind up face down? Do you slip and fall, or do you... You know, any callers with more info on what happened to Whitney, but that, ugh,
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you get in that position. And I don't know how you drown in a bathtub. I mean, it's a bathtub. You should be able, even if you're high on the devil's dandruff, you should just be able to put your arm up and, like, you know, give yourself a little... It's not like it's the ocean or a deep pool. It's a bathtub. There's only one person who shouldn't drown in a bathtub.
Was it her heart? Didn't they say it was the heart attack? Or there was a heart attack? Was it... How did she die of, like, cardiac arrest or...
I guess.
Wound up faced, yeah, and, I don't know. Her assistant had found her personal assistant had found the body.
I mean, that's a great assistant. I'd really feel comfortable with that person.
Who found Elvis?
Probably the guy bringing him the next peanut butter and banana sandwich. I mean, he loved to pound those sandwiches. So sad. It was like one of my memories as a kid, his last concert. You know, watching that on television. And, you know, I knew he was out of shape when he was like sweating, walking up to the mic for the first song. I mean, he was drenched. It's like, oh man.
He's wearing drapes. He's wearing all this his Evel Knievel jumpsuit.
Momo. I mean, you know, he used to live right below us. I used to, as a kid, see him running around his pool with all these hot girls. We lived up in Bel Air, and not every comic comes from a filthy poor background. And
I'd not presume they had. I always presume kind of middle of the road suburbia class clown kind of a origin for a lot of comics. But that's
presumption. You know, I guess no one's ever done a study. I mean, I'm sure a good amount of comics have come from varying backgrounds, but I don't think you hear too many people say they. They grew up in Bel Air.
Bel Air, that's, yeah.
But it was very lucky.
For people listening, Bel Air is like Beverly Hills on steroids.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the funny thing is my parents really weren't wealthy. They just bought, my dad bought the house in like the mid-50s when Bel Air was, you know, really no better neighborhood than, say, Culver City. And there was a Bel Air fire in the late 60s. Or it might have been mid-60s before I was born that literally wiped out every home in Bel Air but my dad's house. Because my dad had the sprinkler system. He was on the roof watering. Nothing was taking my dad's house down. So, you know, it was just luck. We had the only house left. And then it grew up into what it is now. So, but we were like the Addams family. You know, we definitely didn't fit in the neighborhood.
Elvis was below you on the hill?
Elvis was below us. OJ was like a block away. Sylvester Stallone, when he was married, or I don't know if he was married to her, but Susan Anton, very tall, blonde actress. Who else? Kareem was our next door neighbor. And he had a really cool house because he was so tall, it was just circular. There were no corners in his house. And, you know, it was very strange. And he would jog in the neighborhood in dolphin shorts and nothing else. So it was like, you know, this is Bel Air in the 70s. There weren't a lot of brothers around. You know, now I'm sure a lot of rappers and basketball players are there. But, you know, this was like...
I knew one kid that was a kid of somebody in the business and lived up in Bel Air. Kadada Jones. And I would go up and met Quincy Jones, was having a little light gathering of adults and the kids. And we're all like, you know, 17 to 18 or some 14 and 15. There were different ages. Like any kid, even close to the business within 3-5 years was your friend.
Oh, sure.
Nothing, you know, sexual. Don't make it sexual. It wasn't like that. Just friends and some. What was the other? The Wilson Phillips. There's the Bijou Phillips.
Yeah.
Whatever. Running in these kinds of crowds and going up to Bel Air. It was almost football field size property sometimes, and great, you know, estates on it. And then just the view over L.A.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, we grew up next to Dean Martin's home, which was I think Nicolas Cage bought it from him. I don't know if he owns it anymore. He's had some problems, you know. Maybe don't have four castles that you never like visit, but some of the homes, Johnny Carson's home, which is, I don't want to get too deep into the Bel Air geometry. It's on St. Cloud Road, which is just, that's where the heavy hitters are. I mean, we were only on Stone Canyon, which is like a nice area, but if you got a pad on St. Cloud Road, you got some fat money. That's like where the Beverly Hillbillies home is. And, you know, it's just, you know, there's a lot of money up and old money in Bel Air. Mm. So
I did the Malibu thing, but, you know, modest, tract homes and not on the beach, you know, on the other side in the canyons or the hills, but low. It was close. You could quarter mile to the beach. You could walk and public school.
Well, I mean, you know, my brother lives in a trailer park in Malibu. It's crazy.
Like the Point Doom one or the... Yeah?
And it's, I think they're about... It's, when you say trailer park, you think, you know, Jethro Bodine, you know, this is like $4,000 a month for a little trailer. It's crazy.
You can go down to, what is that, like Bluffside or whatever, the little road underneath the Point Doom and see where about 492 movies have been shot.
Oh, sure.
And that beach is so familiar and recognizable instantly. That and like Leo Carrillo. You can always tell. You go, it's Old Point Doom.
It's where the Karate Kid was filmed, you know, the little beach scene. The good one, not the one with Will Smith's kid. That's like the most disappointing thing when you're late night watching television and you see Karate Kid's on and you turn on, then you're going to see Ralph Macchio and Zabka, and it's like, you know, Jackie Chan and the kid. It's like, oh, man, it's such a bummer. Same thing with the Bad News Bears. You know, you want to see little Tanner Boyle, not Billy Bob Thornton, stumbling around.
He did it justice, but there's nothing like the original. There's nothing like the original Bad News Bears.
I think we talked about it once before. Is like none of those kids were actors, so they were just being the kids. And like in the remake, you could tell that the kid playing Tanner was probably been to all these acting schools. And you know, it's like Tanner Boyle in 76, man, he kept it real. I don't know his name, but he was really good.
Now the original was madness. There was just tons of overlapping dialogue, and the kids were just rapidly and three or four talking at the same time, and he's, you know, Walter Matthau is brilliant.
Oh yeah, you know, and just some of the racial lines that they used were just, you could never do those lines, and you know, just,
we thought we were PC in the 90s. It has gotten much more PC.
Oh, you watch those movies in the 70s where, I mean, Blazing Saddles is the obvious ultimate example. You couldn't make that movie today. You know? And, you know, I mean, what was the Escape from Alcatraz? We had, you know, some pretty racially... today you'd have protests. That movie wouldn't be released because of some of the scenes with Clint Eastwood and the main black character that... involve some language that may not be appropriate anymore.
Mm-hmm. It could also have to do with the power that comes with more stars making money of color, and
oh, sure.
SAG pushes it, rewards productions for hiring, minority actors and handicap actors. And they're like, if you got a part and guy don't got no arm, kind of like if, you know, you got a part and the guy's black, you hire black actors. If you hire someone without an arm, you get a break.
Yeah, I mean, times have changed, you know. But see, I like the movies back in the 70s more. There's no CGI. They're just, you know, just acting, you know.
The Deep. So now that was...
Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah. The adventure films. I love Treasure. I love Treasure movies.
Yeah. I mean, the Goonies. Jaws. Look at the first Jaws. I mean, if you look back now, if you watch Jaws now, you look at the shark, you go, that looks ridiculous, because you're so used to seeing these, you know, million-dollar CGI sharks. But there's something about that rubber shark that's like, that looks real. That looks realer than, you know, whatever's in Twilight or...
That's kind of the thing about War Horse. I have to. Spielberg was still doing it the old way in War Horse,
right?
And it was shot after shot of a thousand guys, you know, in the trenches of World War One, and just these storming, you know, scenes of onrushing and blood, like. Not the quick cuts that you see in a lot of action movies or war movies. It wasn't, you couldn't, you know, not tell where you were. It was just a fluid, and just a sequence of these graciously over and over. And I would see one of them, one of those shots. You just go, wow. Then another one. And there was of course CGI, I'm sure, and explosions and smoke and everything, but all those guys running around, doing that, you're like, well, you're watching, you're like, no one, doesn't look like even anyone's torn ankle or, you know, hurt themselves. Got some in my eye.
Yeah, makeup. It's like, well, I was watching Enter the Dragon the other night with Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris in the Coliseum.
And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Well, that was Game of Death.
Oh, it was Game of Death. I apologize.
Yeah, please.
They had another very tall black man. In Enter the Dragon. Didn't they have that trope?
Jim Kelly. I should have, you know. No one should have Jim Kelly's name.
You have the Philodex there that's like, I knew who Aaron Eckhart was before.
Right.
Everybody else did.
Well, I'm fascinated. I have like an elephant's memory for stuff I really enjoy.
You don't drink or do drugs. So that's probably part of the reason. The 90s, I think I shot my memory through with Swiss, you know, like Swiss cheese. It was fun, you know.
You were
like, nothing worse than college or anything.
Yeah, you know, moderation.
Yeah, I'm here. God, thank God.
Yeah, a lot of...
to some people. Thank God. Oh, jeez.
To everyone, man.
Thanks.
This show...
I feel loved.
You are loved. Look at the movies you've been in. I've been in one 6 years ago. You've been in a lot. All classics. Hiding Out. Great movie. I'm being serious.
I do want to promote possible upcoming midnight show showing not of Hiding Out. I think we're working on that. But like I said, De La Renta Studios closed under us. Like, we were the last film released in the theaters by DEG, by De La Renta's company at that time. Like the one that had done King Kong, like up to like 87, and then they dissolved. And the other one was Crash Course with Jay Leno and Shadow Stevens.
Shadow Stevens.
With like a 40-minute chase scene in it.
I love Shadow Stevens. He was the Fred Rated guy. You know, it was like Circuit City before, you know. Circuit City. Do these wacky commercials.
So they bet on the two of them in an action comedy buddy movie.
You know, I think Leno was also in that movie Going Ape with Tony Danza.
Going Ape. Very intimate, familiar with Going Ape, yes.
So what is this midnight release of?
Book of Love. Bob Shea's directorial debut. He also directed The Last Mimsy, but he's owner, CEO of New Line Cinema. He brought Freddie to everybody's screens. And he had this passion work to do a period 50s movie, more Porky's than American Graffiti or Diner than Happy Days. And we had great fun doing it. It's kind of a cultish. He's like had a party every year after for a while to give the running tally of how much he'd lost making the movie. Like, I lost $3 million. Yay. And he'd be like, I only lost $1.5 million. Yay. That's the last I heard, so I don't know.
Well, who knows?
Hard to get a DVD. But they're going to do a midnight. We're trying to get a print. And New Beverly Cinema on Beverly Boulevard, just west of La Brea. They show nearly first run. If a director's tied to something pretty classic, too, they'll do theme. They'll do high-low.
Right.
The other night they did To Catch a Thief and Hudson Hawk. As a double feature.
Hey, listen, I'm in. You tell me when and I'll...
We're trying to get that going. Support your local theaters, people. It's an experience that once it goes away, the only time you're going to be able to experience it is on like the outside of a cemetery wall. I mean, the group experience to watch a movie, you know, it takes real estate and seats, you know, and a nice screen and sound system and that, excuse me, Taco Bell. We have a caller in the 818. Thanks for calling. How can we help you? What's your order, to go or here?
I was just wondering if you guys could recommend like a good Jack Shack on Van Nuys Boulevard.
A good what?
Jack Shack.
What's a Jack Shack?
Like, you know, one of those theaters where you can go jerk off in a booth and stuff.
Oh. Well, I mean, Keith, I don't know if you want to take this call.
You know, I'm more familiar with Hollywood and, you know, the closure of, what was the theater on Western? Remember that?
I actually got in the mud pit.
Deep Throat
there.
Played there for like 20, 25 years.
Well, see, I thought you were talking about the Tropicana, the bikini, the mud
wrestling. Pussycat, I think that's what you're talking about.
No,
so
well,
you know more about the clubs than I do. What's with this Jack Shack question? No, I have no idea.
I'm just a recent transplant to North Hollywood, I mean, to Van Nuys.
Well, you might want to drive... You might want to drive up and down Lancashire. They've got a few businesses that you might patronize, as well as the Studs Theater in Santa Monica and Gardner.
You guys know if the Tomcat is still open in West Hollywood?
That's the Studs Theater. They renamed it.
Oh, that's so far. Do they take checks?
You know, I'm not real familiar with the purchase there. I'm assuming... you wouldn't want to pay with a check. I think these types of establishments would probably be best off as cash only. No paper trail. Right. Do you have another question, maybe?
Last time I was there, I saw Joe Rogan, for what it's worth.
Wait a minute. Didn't you call like a couple of weeks ago asking if Joe Rogan got married?
And we've lost the caller.
That's the guy who kept calling. I knew his voice like a couple of weeks ago.
I'll let you talk to those people.
Well, no, but they're calling for you. They don't know who I am.
I don't know. Are these the people that wrote me when I was like 12 years old and said they wanted to be my assistant?
Probably. Call back again. Was that David Faustino?
Well, we got 8 minutes left, and David knows exactly where all the Jack Shacks are on Van Nuys.
David, if you're out there,
ask that.
Call. We got another guy you'd get you involved with. I've never heard it called a Jack Shack before.
That's rude and crass and totally appropriate for the call sheet. Tales of the Bone Machine, live, Friday night. Saturday. What fucking night is it?
So Saturday night.
8 o'clock. It's 6 minutes to go. And all I got left is Bully. Significantly, a Bully, great documentary on bullying in schools and abuse these kids have to take. And the atmosphere it's like growing up. I don't think adults have any idea what it's like to be a kid in school today.
Oh, kids are so mean. I was bullied in high school.
I was bullied too. Not to one-up you.
No.
I was totally socked and, you know, and totally picked out small. I'm shoved in lockers, trash cans. Absolutely bullied.
I mean, kids can be vicious, man, about, you know, your looks, your social, if you come from poor parents or... You know, even if you come from rich parents, like a Tori Spelling, I'm sure she was bullied, you know.
We have a caller.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, guys. Is this a lightning round?
Yes, it is. What?
All right, Jim, nice to speak to you. Mega booyahs. Can you tell me whether I should stay long on Goldman Sachs?
What? You want to short that. What we're looking at is moving into natural resources. You want to focus on, of course, agriculture. We're going to do the corns. But we're looking at precious metals. We want you to take a look at some copper. Copper is going to be absolutely rare. Once the EMP and the solar flares next year, actually at the December 2012, nobody knows about this, scientists do. But once that happens, only terrestrial hardwired. We're going to have to go back to steampunk. So copper is going to be the future. Thanks for your call.
What is this, the Art Bell show now?
Absolutely.
Is this Coast to Coast? Is George Norrie next?
It is.
Was that a stock question?
Absolutely. And we're happy to help you with anything here. That's the thing about Hollywood and being an actor. I don't know about, you know, comedy's very hard. I've never even tried stand-up. I'm chicken shit. But being an actor, you know a lot about, you know, very little about a lot. You have a very thin knowledge. You're like, oh, I know about diving. Yeah, you've done it once or twice when you had an audition. Oh, horseback rider. And the rule is you're supposed to say yes. Where the fuck they ask? Would you do it? Mm-hmm. The rule is you're supposed to say yes. And if it's something you can't or have to decide between then and the shoot, you have time to learn it, study it, hire someone to train you to do it.
Not necessarily. They're
naked, but...
Well, yeah.
Or get a double or whatever. They have to work that out. So that's the one thing is you don't get to become a rocket scientist. There are actresses that go to school. And how come you don't learn about... Like, you hear about James Franco going to college. But did you hear him become like a rocket scientist?
Well, I imagine he didn't go for that long to achieve that status.
But the girls do. They all got, oh, a PhD in this. And I'm like, I got my master's in this. They fucking got an education. Damn, pissed.
Well, it depends on what school they went to. You know?
Become a physical therapist, assistant. I don't think that's too much school.
Well, that's a good job.
Well, the nurses that got shot. Oh, that was so sad. At the nurse college, 1 year to be a nurse. And an ex-student came in brandishing a weapon and said, everyone line up here, and just started mowing everybody down. They didn't give him a refund on his student loan thingy or whatever. He lost his shit.
Well, it's like that the guy who shot all those people in Oakland, speaking of bullying. He said he was got sick of being made fun of for his haircut and because of his speech. You know, he didn't speak real good English. And that's, you know, you got to be careful who you bully. You don't know what's going on in their head. No.
Now Bully is available to see to wider audiences because Harvey Weinstein stuck a gun to the MPAA's head. They got a huge, like, 600,000 petition going to, you know, anti-MPAA so that kids could see this movie about bullying that affects them. They wanted to rate it R, and they were like, could you do PG-13? That'll help a lot of kids that really need to see this. Finally, they had intercedent, and he's like, that make this happen, and they did, and they waived the 90-day waiting period so that other versions of a film aren't confused with what's currently out. That's the standard in MPAA. So we're waiving this so that you can create a PG-13 cut, mainly a scene on a bus where students are calling a kid's verbal. And they're like, that language, we can't have that language. That's the one thing the MPAA parents trust. They're very happy with our job of keeping your kids safe from language and violence and sex. That's a good rock song, man. Language and violence and sex.
Send it to Desmond Child and he'll write a song for Bon Jovi about it.
I learned that A Steel Horse I Ride was his tour bus. I didn't put that together when I was growing up. But
oh, I thought it was something else.
Steel, like a motorcycle or something?
I thought he was talking about a certain body part.
That makes no sense. This has been The Call Sheet with Keith Coogan, Earl Skakel. Thanks for coming out, Earl.
Hey, it's an honor, man. I mean, this is great. Calling more guys, Facebook, Skid Row Studios, figure it out.
Thanks for listening. Have a great night, everybody.